is Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
Hello, welcome back to another Radio 314 program. As always, my name is Lana. Today I'll be speaking with Mike Cleland. He spends his time between illustrations at his desk and working as an instructor in the mountains. He runs a blog called Hidden Experience, which delves into his experiences with strangeness and synchronicity. Mike has also recorded 80 hours of audio interviews focusing on the UFO abduction experience. Well, hello, Mike. Welcome. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I can definitely tell you're a tidy art director, illustrator type because your website is so easy to read. It's organized, it's user-friendly, and it's fun to read.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I did work as an art director for a big long stretch in New York City a million years ago in my formative years. And I do it partially just because I want it to be easy to navigate, and I don't want people to be confused or intimidated because at this point I seem to have a ton of stuff up there, so I just want to make it easy for folks to dive into.
Well, since you're from Detroit, what do you think of it going from the capital of capitalism to the ghost town it is today?
I actually haven't lived in Detroit since I was like 18 years old. And I never actually lived in Detroit proper. I lived in the suburbs just outside.
Okay.
And Detroit, I feel very sad for Detroit. Detroit is a hollow shell of what it once was. It's a sad, haunted place.
Yeah, I can't believe Stalin wanted to copy Detroit on the banks of the Volga a long time ago.
Oh, well, he got his wish. I guess we copied Stalin in a way because it's just completely crumbled. You know?
Yep, exactly. Good point. So before we delve into synchronicities, aliens, elves, and symbolism, tell us what sparked your desire to create the Hidden Experience website.
It's a blog, technically, not a website, but get this right. Yeah, so this would be 2009. I was at a UFO conference. Now, my own sort of evolution in all this has happened quite recently. I'm 50 years old right now, so turn the clock back to 2009, what I would have been about 46 or so. And I was not at peace with this stuff going on in my life. I was not comfortable with it. I didn't believe it. I didn't trust it. I was working very hard to deny it, but at the same time, I was going to UFO conferences and studying it sort of compulsively. There's a woman. She would be a great person for you to interview. Her name is Miriam Delicato.
Yeah, I know who she is.
Oh yeah, yeah. For some reason, I took her aside and I said, "Listen, I would love to sit down and talk with you." And this was at a tacky casino in Laughlin, Nevada, too. It was just as this is like an anti-spiritual environment.
Well, they're all pretty tacky there in Vegas, so.
Yeah, this is as bad as it gets. Yeah, so we sat and talked for a bit, and I explained kind of what was been going on in my life and how hard it was. And I basically asked her for some advice, and she thought for a moment and she said, "You need to talk about this. You need to share this stuff." And driving home from the conference, I recognized that she was right. I did need to talk about this. Well, not so much. I took her very seriously when she said that. Let me put it that way. And it was a long drive. I live in Idaho, and then to get from Nevada to Idaho is a pretty long stretch. So I had a lot of time to think. And then when I did get home, this would have been in March, early March of 2009. I don't think I'm exaggerating where I think I don't even think I took my coat off. I'm quite certain I did take my coat off, but I think I went right to the computer and just started the website, you know, there and then. At the time I was, you know, I had another small little website where I had some illustration stuff posted, so I knew exactly what I was going to, you know, whatever, how to go about starting it. So, within minutes of walking in the door, it felt like the thing was up and online.
Hmm. Well, I like the following quote on your blog. "This blog is dedicated to the deeply personal side of an elusive something. There is a phenomenon at play in our world, and it seems to present itself as unknowable. Something is happening, and I feel strongly that it is very real. Honestly, an open mind and an open heart are required to better understand what is happening. The area of studying coincidences, synchronicity, connections, esoterica, symbolism is turned into the term synchromysticism, or as you call it, synchro-weirdness, which I like better. These are areas you've been documenting. So in your view, what is synchronicity?
There's a definition that Jung gave, and it would be a meaningful coincidence. Let's just say he basically said a longer definition, but a coincidence that has profound meaning to the observer would be my definition. Now, synchronicities are a little bit like dreams in a way, where oftentimes, like, the person experiencing the synchronicity can't truly share or articulate the power of the synchronistic event. Not unlike a dream, you know. Often it's very easy to have a dream and have it feel, powerful and strong in your own psyche. But then, you know, when you try to describe that dream to someone else, you can just watch their eyes glaze over.
Yeah, Michael Talbot suggested that the holographic model basically provided a means for understanding these experiences. So if we can access the holographic, we can tap into senses that seem beyond our ability. And synchronicities is part of that. And telepathy, ESP, paranormal. I'd agree with that.
You sure? Yeah, there's something going on that we are somehow incapable of understanding in its totality. All we can see are these little refractions and little glints of something more profound that's taking place, you know, beyond our ability to comprehend using, you know, normal consciousness. It seems like there's something greater behind the curtain that's in essence interacting with us, although it's interacting in ways that often seem, you know, very strange.
Mm-hmm. Are your synchronicities pushing you into a specific direction? Or are you getting to look at something in particular again and again?
I had a conversation with Alan Green Henrik interviewed at one point about his book. He put out a book called The Sync Book. And, he talked about the synchronicities being a compass, you know, when you're out on the open water. You know, if you're out in the open water and the sun's not up, or if it's cloudy, there's no way to understand, you know, which direction you're traveling. You have to depend on that compass. Mm-hmm. I feel like synchronicities can be used as a compass to each fork in the path. You can use that synchronicity to make a decision, to make a choice on how you're going to proceed. And I found that the more I recognize and sort of embrace these synchronicities, the more, the stronger the pull gets, the more powerful the following synchronicity gets. There's a higher resonance to the whole thing. And I made a declaration in a way to post all my synchronicities online. Some of them might be completely benign and not mean anything at all, but I've seen them anyway. But I also think that actually sharing them publicly gives them a different resonance, gives them a stronger power than they might have had if I just, you know, kept them locked in my own head, or if I had only, you know, scribbled them down in a diary and then, you know, never shared that diary with anyone.
Maybe it's little landmarks we planned before we got here. This and this will happen, and this will trigger my memory for this and this.
Perhaps, yeah. Or it's, or we are outwardly influencing the universe from a subconscious way, you know, I know that there's an author, his name is Dr. Kirby Surprise, and he puts forth an argument, which is interesting. I don't know if it's true or not, that the observer is actually creating the synchronistic experience the same way that, in a laboratory, you know, people will, do a coin toss experiment and it will not be random. It should be random by all, you know, it should be perfectly random, but it's not. They have for some reason, there is the observer has the ability to influence reality itself and change the outcome of the coin toss in a way that's, you know, easily documented.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I also think that synchronicity tends to go away if you stop focusing on it. you have to be paying attention and looking for it to really see it as well.
Yes, you certainly have to have your eyes open. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, one of the areas you've been documenting is the connection between the UFO phenomena and synchronicities. Can you talk about this?
I wrote a essay a while back that got put, this is actually interesting, it got put in Alan Green's second book called Sync Book 2, and the title of the essay is Synchronicity and the UFO Abductee. And I had been little by little coming to terms with my own experiences, and I found that I was capable of denying, you know, like I had what would be fairly profound experiences that I was, you know, actively, aggressively denying, that I was you know, pushing out of my mind. I was not allowing them to seem real to me. And on some level, I recognized that, you know, this something very real was going on, but it wasn't the actual events. It wasn't the actual memories of the odd experiences that were influencing the way I was framing it. It was actually the follow-up synchronicities that were having the larger impact on me, where I was having very profound coincidental experiences, and those were impossible to ignore. I figured out a way to ignore, you know, some events in my youth and some events fairly recently, but I could not ignore the synchronicities. So it was less the experience, you know, perhaps like I've got of missing time and seeing UFOs, but it was more the experience of the synchronicity that forced me to face the reality of all this. Now I have a friend and in some sort of like, you know, state of pontification, you know, I said, you know, I think that UFO abductees have more synchronicities than the average person. And she kind of rolled her eyes and said, anyone on a spiritual path will have lots of synchronicities. And I realized she was right. And, you know, it forced me to reevaluate how I frame all this stuff. Now, what it actually did is it made me frame the UFO abduction experience as a spiritual path, which actually I feel is a good analogy. I feel it works. I feel you can play with that. And then at the same time, as I've been working on this online blog, I've been talking to a lot of people who had the firsthand abduction experience or the firsthand contact experience. And that's one of the questions I ask them. It's like, do you experience lots of synchronicities? And, you know, the answer is, pretty much universally, like they say, like, you know, I experienced so many synchronicities, I struggle to keep my sanity.
Hmm. Well, any direct experiences you'd like to mention? Maybe what happened to you in Utah?
Just recently?
Yeah.
Well, that's not so, I don't know if that was a synchronicity, but I can certainly talk about that.
Sure.
So this is, what's the date today? Today's like
March 29th.
March 29th. So this event took place on Sunday, March 10th. So that's 19 days ago. So this is very recent. And I was at a UFO conference, which takes place annually in Phoenix. And on the drive home, I was visiting some friends in Flagstaff. So I left Flagstaff in the afternoon and was driving north on Highway 89. And then there's to get over to the main interstate, which is a corridor that runs the entire length of Utah, I had to get on this little highway, Highway 20, which is very small. I've driven it before. It's very pretty. And I knew the sun was going to go down and I was tired. I didn't want to drive when it was dark. So I do what I do all the time, which is I just pull off to the side of the road. You know, the West is wonderful for that. And I just slept out under the stars. It was fairly early when I laid my sleeping bag down. It must have been around 9 o'clock or so. I didn't have a watch with me, so I don't really know what time it was exactly. But at one point during the night, I woke up. It was a gorgeous, beautiful, calm night. The stars were spectacular. And if you can imagine a big western valley. And then fairly close to where I was lying, there was a set of, you know, rolling hills that were kind of looming above me. And I looked up and there was a round structure. And I just looked at it and I completely thought, like, oh, this is somebody. This is a building. It's a big round building. I didn't notice it before. And I even in the moment, I went through the sort of the mental thought process of thinking, like, wow, if this was a flying saucer, if this was like an unknown UFO, I would sense it. I would feel it. You know, like I would feel something odd. So I was very calm, you know, that kind of peaceful sensation when you just ease out of sleep. And I just looked up at it and I said, do I feel anything unusual? Do I feel anything at all unsettling? And I didn't. It felt completely at peace and completely calm. I woke up a couple more times throughout the night and the structure was still there. And there was also another point when I woke up and there was a light very close to me on the ground. Now, to describe where I was lying, there were some bushes nearby where the car was parked. And so I didn't have a big, long field of view down low. But I could definitely sense that there was a light, you know, just on the opposite side of some set of bushes. It didn't seem necessarily bright. It wasn't like a car headlight or anything like that. So I figured someone else must have just pulled in to do the same thing that I was doing, which was just sleeping on the side of the road. And I just laid my head back down and went back to sleep. I woke up around 4 a.m. I was completely content and refreshed and felt, you know, like this was a good time to start driving, but, you know, before there was any traffic. So I just hopped in the car and tossed everything in the back and started driving again. When I got home, which would have been later that same day, I did something that is unusual, that surprised me. I got on Google Earth because I figured I could look up and see what this big round building was. So I just checked Google Earth, and I'm very skilled with maps. I've done a lot of map work. I travel a bunch in the mountains around here out west, so I feel very confident with my map skills. And I knew exactly where that big round structure should have been, but there was nothing there. There was just a forest there. On one level, the map was this 2013 right now, and the map was made in the summer of 2011. So in the last year and a half, perhaps someone could have built a building there. But as events and odd little things started popping up, I suspect that that's not the case.
Now, you posted some images also to go along with this blog entry. So where did those images come from?
The images are one of them is just a recreation of the hillside with what I visually remember seeing, which is pretty accurate, as I recall, of the round structure. You know, so it was just, it would look like, and it looks like an illuminated squatty cylinder that has a, here, I'm looking at it right now. Let me just scroll to that. Yeah. So it looks like a slow squatty cylinder with a ring of lights around it, in among the trees at a ridge line. I think it's very helpful for me to go through the process of drawing it. And I did this, that was the next day. So that was less than 24 hours later at when I actually drew that. I used colored it in with using Photoshop. But and then I grabbed some other images just of maps and exactly where, you know, I was sleeping and stuff like that, just to give it an idea. I think I even put I did put the latitude and longitude of the of where I was sleeping, as well as the peak where that structure was. Now, I posted that the following day. That same day that I posted it, I guess I posted that around lunchtime or something, and then that same day, now this is where it gets strange, and I would not call this a synchronicity. I would call this some sort of psychic knowing. I felt in my head, and this is not, it didn't come like in a sentence. It wasn't like some words explained anything. I just got this kind of whoosh, this knowing of that if I sat down on a computer and played with the map program, I would be able to create a straight line connecting three separate events. So I just did exactly that. I sat down and lined up three events. One was the event that took place 19 days ago on March 10th. The other one took place in 2010, and that would be the easternmost dot on the map. And then what happened was, now this is, I'm trying to describe something visually by using words. So just, so if you have two separate points on a map, right, and you pull a string really close between them, right, and you make mm-hmm. them perfectly tight, I knew this gets strange. I knew that the third event would line up on that string. The map was that string ended up to be I don't know, you know, well over 200 miles long, and when I zoomed in on that line using Google Maps, there was an event that took place in 2011 that that lined up like to the millimeter.
So I mean, three experiences in the same area, kind of dot, 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 dot. I saw the image, yeah.
But the not quite the same area. That line is like 230 miles long, so it's not quite, you know, it's not like they all happened in a, you know, a tiny area. That's a big sprawling
desert
section of the southern Utah. So in each one of those events, you know, taken individually, are equally as profound, or probably more profound than what happened the other night on that Sunday night, sleeping on the side of the road 19 days ago.
So what kind of sinks did you have before or surrounding the event?
Well, so one thing that happened when I got home is I got a phone call from someone. She's also a blogger, and she's had her own direct experience. She's had gobs of experience. She's actually a very interesting person. And her pen name is Lucretia Hart. And she called me out of the blue, which is something, I guess she's done that before, but not often. And she just kind of called, and we talked for a while, and she wanted to share something. And it wasn't necessarily, it was interesting. We had a good conversation. But when I posted the thing the next day, she got back to me right away, and she said that she had seen the same light on a hilltop. After she saw my illustration, she said she had seen that same light on a hilltop, and it was almost the same experience, where she was in her house. She was living in Ohio at the time. She was looking up at a hillside. She said, someone built a house up there. Isn't that interesting? And then, she would do some errands in the house, and she would go back to the window and look up there, and it's like, that house, that's interesting. I've never noticed that house before. And she did it two or three times, just like I did it that night. And then the next morning, she woke up and there was nothing there. And that was, you know, she kind of had that, like, you know, oh shit moment, where she was like, I think I know what that means. And so she called, and then another woman contacted me, who very rarely contacts me, who's also had her own set of experiences the same day. We also have sort of a benign conversation, and then later she gets back to me and she said, I saw that same thing on a hillside. And then she, you know, she basically told almost the same story that the other woman had shared.
So what do you think it is? Do you think it's government crafts? Do you think it's true alien crafts? What's your feeling?
Well, my thought is if it's, I don't think it's a government craft, because of the weird synchronicities and the psychic event that followed. In the making the map really kind of waked me out, I got to say. I mean, it was so, you're sitting here, I'm sitting all alone at my house. I'm in front of the computer. I zoom in on this thing and I realize, like, damn, this is like, this is freakishly exact in a way that defies any logic. So, I don't think the government could land their, you know, high-tech military craft on a hillside and then, you know, give me a psychic message and make sure that all these things lined up that took, you know, sure, 4 years to unravel. So I don't know, you know, this is going to sound a little self-conscious or, you know, self-aggrandizing or anything like that. But it's, my sense is that the map was introduced to me specifically so I could play detective and kind of use it as a clue and try to solve something. It feels like, well, I don't know what its intended purpose was, but the result of it was the very next blog post is something I had actually never posted as clearly before. I had certainly hinted to it and alluded to it and danced around the subject. But I basically said that, you know, whatever's going on, I am involved. I can no longer deny it, and that I am involved with this, you know, giant challenging phenomena. I sort of danced around the word abductee. I just don't like that term. I just doesn't feel honest to use that term. I think what I said is, I feel that I am intertwined with the UFO reality.
So in your view, what the hell is the alien abduction phenomena?
Well, I mean, the alien abduction is a simple, I mean, it's a catch term that gets used, you know, by, I use it all the time too. I mean, I must.
Or alien encounter. I understand abduction and encounter could be different things, or you could have a psychic experience with them, not necessarily a physical one, but what do you think is going on there?
You know, I have no idea. I mean, I can wrestle with it from every different angle. I feel like I can speculate it about it, you know, backwards, forwards, you know, and so I don't have any concrete answer. I do feel that, my sense is that there's like, it's an awakening process for the individuals experiencing it. You know, they are being confronted, and I'll include myself in this, with something that shatters their definition of normal reality. And then secondhand, the greater public at large can then, you know, this information is out there. It's in the pop culture. And I think it's seeping out there more and more and more, specifically through the internet. The greater public at large is being affected. You know, the ripples in the pond are created by the people having the firsthand experience. Those ripples are somehow affecting not just the individual, but the collective as a whole. My hope is that this wake-up call, this enlightenment process, that's kind of a lofty term. Maybe I should avoid something so fraught with kind of a religious overtone. But that this process is... I just feel like something is needed right now in humanity. Whether this is playing a big role, a small role, I don't know. But I think that the awakening of individuals and hopefully the collective, you know, has a beneficial effect on humanity as a whole.
So you mean aliens could be assisting in that? Having these experiences?
Oh yeah, they're certainly. You know, I've talked to a lot of people who have this experience, and you know, they'll say like, "Oh, you know, I had this missing time. I saw these UFOs. I've seen these owls. I've had these synchronicities." And then somewhere along the lines, they'll say, "And my definition of reality has changed. Now I'm meditating. Now I'm, you know, reading these different books. Now my interests have turned. You know, like I'm a vegetarian." I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who have had these experiences and then, you know, follow up by saying like, "Oh, now I'm a vegetarian." So whatever's going on in that long-winded explanation, I don't think that it was a military craft parked on a hill that like created all the follow-up synchronicities.
You know, something I notice is basically two camps of people that have had alien encounters or have been abducted. There's one that's just terrified and freaked out, and then there's these other people that are like, "It's okay, it's not so bad." And then they start getting almost a little arrogant, like, "I am the chosen one. I see now. I understand." Have you encountered that?
Oh God. Yeah, like yes, I've encountered exactly that. And you know, where it's interesting is at this UFO conference that I go to sometimes, you know, there'll be a experiencer support group, and it's just, you can just picture an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, everyone sitting in a circle and talking about their experiences. And there's people get angry at each other. You know, the people that have the love and light experiences can't relate to the people who have the terrifying experiences, and the terrifying people who have had the terrifying experiences, you know, yeah, there's a great gulf. I mean, I've seen people getting, you know, not quite shouting matches, but close. And yeah, so there's a real split as far as how the overall experience manifests. And I don't understand it. I've heard people say like, "Oh, all you have to do is just, you know, it's, you're bringing your own preconceptions there and you're creating your own fears and
blah, and, blah, blah."
Yeah, that doesn't, like, I don't know if that really plays out, you know, like, the, I mean, I, you know, I, one, the easier solution to me is like, you know, some people are just shit out of luck and they get the darker experiences for reasons that like I wouldn't even attempt to guess.
Yeah, and I don't think it's all just made up in the mind. Either it is or it really is happening.
Well, something's really happening, and it may be much more complicated than the surface story. I mean, like, you know, you could get a bunch of elementary school kids together and they could have a conference and they could talk about, all the clues they have that, you know, Santa Claus lives on the North Pole. And, you know, it's because their parents told them, you know, they could read it in a book. They met this nice man at the shopping mall who explained that he lived at the North Pole. And then, you know, there's going to come a day when that's not going to play out as true. They're going to realize like, oh, there's something else going on. And that mythology, you know, may have served some purpose, but now I've moved beyond that. So I sort of look at the UFO contact experience in that realm a little bit. Like, there's not much you can say to your dog besides, you know, good dog, you know, and there may not be much they can say to us beyond, whatever, we're from the Pleiades.
Or aliens are going to save us. I can't stomach that kind of stuff anymore. This channeled material.
Yeah, no, I've befriended a lot of people who channel stuff, and I think that they're being quite honest as far as that's the material they're receiving. And though it may not be entirely accurate, it may be in some metaphoric or mythological that, you know, never say that to a channeler. I found that out. Like, you know, like, oh, you might be talking in metaphor, you know, and they don't want to hear that. But that's my sense, is that, you know, like I listen very carefully to what they say, but I don't, I weigh it very cautiously. Let me put it that way.
Well, and the thing is too, we're all channeling all the time. If we're all connected and all part of some kind of creation, it comes through the different funnels.
Yes. But those funnels and those blinders, we've integrated them so seamlessly that we ignore it. We don't understand that stuff is coming through. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. But you know, the vast majority of us are completely oblivious to the power of those channeled messages.
Now, have you had any experiences where you've encountered a being, or even an entity, doesn't have to be an alien, could be something astral, where the feeling of your consciousness is being almost sampled or ripped out of your body? I've heard that one quite a bit.
I have never had that direct experience. The event that I talked about earlier, that kind of psychic knowing, has happened to me a few times. Each time it's happened, it has been directly related to the UFO phenomenon. It's not like I'm getting, you know, a psychic download, like where the best parking lot at the, or best parking spot at the grocery store is. It's each time it's happened, it has been directly connected with the phenomena somehow. So I have not had that kind of that experience. I did have a very, so that map I was talking about, there was the westernmost point was the event that happened 19 days ago. The easternmost point was an event that happened 4 years ago. Is that right? 2010, 3 years ago. That event I experienced, along with another person, we both experienced the exact same thing. We experienced a profound sense of terror that defies any simple explanation. We were in a tent at the time, and I've spent a lot of time over the years in the backcountry in tents. We were actually in the front country, or just parked on the side of the road in a little Forest Service road. It was beyond... I mean, mere vocabulary words wouldn't be able to describe it. I've talked with other people who've had the abduction experience, and we'll both try to describe what we're talking about. And the only thing we can kind of come, you know, the words we gravitate to that we share is when we start saying, like, it felt like synthetic fear. So I have felt that, and that once was enough. So.
Well, let's also talk about the role of owls in UFO sightings. I know you've written about this quite a bit.
Well, this is coming directly from my own experience. So this, like the fact that I've been writing about it is definitely, sure, just rolls out of my own, you know, my own curiosity and my own burning kind of, you know, desire to play detective and figure out what's up. I've had, for reasons I don't quite understand, I've had a lot of owl sightings. It was actually recently, there was a guy from a raptor center where they take injured birds of prey and they take them to a, like a veterinarian ranch near where I live, and then that they will then tour around and bring the animals to. This was like a fundraising event. So it was in a barn, and they had a golden eagle and a falcon, and then they had an owl. So I was talking to one of the biologists there, and I was kind of like, oh, so, you know, here, let me run this by. You ever heard this kind of story? And I told him a story where I saw a bunch of owls, and he was like, nope, that doesn't happen. And it's like, oh, then I told him another one, and he's like, no, that doesn't happen. And then, you know, I kept on doing it. And at a certain point, I got kind of a sense of glee, you know, like I was almost like realizing, like, let's see how far I can push this. So I kept on telling him one story after another, and you could see him actually becoming physically uncomfortable and like move away from me. So, but, you know, first of all, I live in a place where there are lots of owls. So if I'm going to see owls, this is about as good a place as anywhere where I could see them. But I don't, and I've talked to other people who have had the same sorts of owl experiences, and I don't quite understand the what it means. And I'm not, there's two things going on. So there's a screen memory, which if anyone who's looked into this even slightly, you know, the overall UFO abduction lore, there's a story that gets repeated over and over again, and the person having the abduction event will say like, oh, I was driving down the road. It was late at night. I turned this corner and there standing in the road was a 4 foot tall owl and it was staring at me. It was so strange. And the next thing I knew, I was pulling into my driveway and I was 2 hours late getting home. Now that kind of story, you can, you know, through hypnotic regression, which has got its own bag of worms as far as how much to trust that. But, the thought is that is a screen memory, that there's some sort of hypnotic projection placed into the mind of the abductee where they are being shown or they're being theatrically treated to the visual image of an owl when what it is actually doing is masking the presence of what is quite probably a gray alien with the big black eyes, you mm-hmm. know, the eyes being the focal point of the whole thing. Now, what I'm talking about is real owls that are, you know, that are just showing up at odd and prescient moments. Should I just tell you an owl story?
Yeah, I'd love to.
So this is going back to 2006. Now, I said earlier that like this is all pretty new for me. It's only happened in the last few years where it feels like I've been hit pretty hard and this stuff has accelerated in my life. This would have been right at the point when I was contemplating, you know, really looking into this stuff. Like at that point, the story I'm about to tell, I was in complete and total denial, except for the little flicker of a question in the back of my mind that said, you know, you should probably look into this. So I live in a small town. I live right near a Grand Teton National Park, so I can go camping for one night, and it's beautiful. I do it a lot in the summertime. I'll just go out into the mountains and oftentimes without a shelter because I know what the weather's going to do. So there was a young woman that was living in town here, and she had been working at a school here. And I said, oh, you've been here for all this time. You must go camping all the time. And she said, no, I haven't camped yet. And I was like, oh, I go camping all the time. I'll drag you out. So within a few days, I called her up and said, I'm going out tonight and you should come along. And so we hiked out into the mountains. And you don't have to go very far and find a beautiful spot. And it was late in the afternoon, so we didn't really, you know, log that many miles. And we found a beautiful spot to camp. And we were sitting on this big flat rock, and I was making dinner out of a little camp stove. And we were having this conversation, and there was this point in the conversation where I realized, like, wow, this woman is impressive. Something like she said something that triggered something in me that like all of a sudden I realized like, well, this is one smart woman that I'm interacting with. And it was at that moment that an owl flew over us mm-hmm. and then another owl and then a third owl. And so these three owls flew above us all throughout the sunset. And they just stayed with us. And what we did is we laid our sleeping bags down on the ground and just laid under the stars. We didn't have a shelter. And it continued on as we were laying on our backs. Like the owls would literally swoop down in front of us and block out our vision for just a micro instant. And they're very quiet when they fly. So it's a very eerie sensation. So even as we were laying down on our backs, the owls were flying right above us.
Unless someone's spying on you through the owls.
Unless, well, that's actually something that you can speculate about. That is someone using the owls? Someone, let's say the gray aliens or this, you know, some alien presence. Are they using the owls, using their eyes the same way that, you know, like someone in the Pentagon would use a security camera on a drone, you know, that they were getting, you know, they were checking us out, they were seeing us, and an owl would be a perfect instrument if someone actually did have the psychic powers to tap into their field of vision. I mean, they have night vision, they're quiet, they can fly, you know, they can travel without, you know, creating a lot of attention to themselves. So, you know, I have no idea whether that's true or not. It is fun to speculate along those lines. Now here, let me just, so this woman's name is Kristen. We were both a little freaked out, like, wow, that was really weird, the owl thing. So a couple days later, I said, hey, I'm going out camping again. You want to come along? And she said, sure. So we went camping again, totally different part of the mountains. We went to we're high in this ridgeline, and it was actually colder this time. So it was a little bit, you know, it felt like we were chilly and the sun was setting. And I said, okay, to warm up, why don't we walk up to the top of this hill? We can watch the sunset and we can get warm just walking uphill. So it takes 5 minutes or so. We get to the top of this beautiful hill. We watch the sunset. It's gorgeous. And as we're standing there, three owls like land near us. They sit on branches near us. They fly around us. The exact same experience happens less than, I think it was 4 days later. Same person, completely different part of the mountains. And then three owls fly around us, hang out with us. My cat is walking on my desk here.
Our cats do that too when we record and jump on stuff.
Yeah. So now this is when I started to look into this, and I actually wrote this up as like a diary entry, and I got a hold of Kristen. Now, she had moved. She was no longer living in town. So this is a couple of years had gone by. It actually would have been 3 years later because this event happened in 2006. And this would have been one of my first blog posts, which I had written up as a diary, and it was her story. But right after I posted it, I called her and I said, you know, Kristen, this is going to be a funny question. Do you remember what we were talking about when that first set of owls appeared when we were cooking on that flat rock? And because it made a very strong impression on me, but I couldn't remember exactly what we're talking about. So she said, oh, yeah, I remember exactly what it was. She said, I was giving my deepest, most heartfelt definition of what God meant to me. Now, if I hadn't asked, I mean, I think that one detail adds a richness and a depth to the overall story that wouldn't be there if I didn't ask it. And I think it's also, I guess the whole owl thing gets pretty much ignored by the nuts and bolts crowd. But, you know, that takes an already fascinating story and then pushes it right into the realm of the mystical.
I love owls. There's something special about them, definitely.
Well, they certainly are beautiful. And they have a very strong presence, and they're spooky, and they've got the big eyes, and they're quiet, and, you know, they only come out at night, and they don't look like any other predator bird and stuff. Yeah. So it's very easy to, owls are just visually alone, you know, not even, you know, following up on all the, you know, the rich lineage of the mythology that's associated with owls. You know, they're just impressive to look at.
Yeah, I used to live in Bend, Oregon in the high desert, and there was one that sat in a juniper tree right at the end of the driveway. So it was there almost every night when I would be walking in up through the door, just looking at me. But I felt real cuddly towards it, like I wanted to hug it.
I would not advise hugging an owl. Talons and big, yeah, there. So, yes, they are very beautiful. Yeah, and they do have tons of charisma.
Well, to switch the subject here, you wrote an eerie piece about Kubrick, Fowler, and the Watchers. Can you talk about that? Since I think it's so interesting.
Okay. So that actually has proven to be a very popular post. I actually don't get that many hits on my site, but that one post has been linked by other folks, and so through other people linking to it, it's gotten a lot of hits. That was actually a long format essay for me, which I don't really write that kind of thing that often, like where I just kind of go off and just kind of speculate and just kind of. That came from Raymond Fowler wrote a book called The Watchers in the, I think, the late 80s, early 90s. And it was part of the Betty Andreasen series. in that book, there's a kind of in the end, he speculates about the how the gray alien looks similar to a human fetus. Now, at some point, just shortly before writing the article, I watched Planet of the Apes. And I realized, like, wow, Planet of the Apes in 2001, they're really similar movies, right? They both have, like, a funny wormhole sequence. They have, you know, apes with, you know, high-tech Hollywood makeup for the time. And then I realized, wow, they're both from 1968. Hmm. And then just started, like, digging into this a little bit. And then it felt like the synchronistic floodgates just opened up. And I'm not exaggerating when I'm going to say this, that essay wrote itself. Like, I didn't really do anything. I just kind of stood back and just kind of like let my fingers move on the keyboard and this stuff just like flowed out of me, and it got so weird. And I mean, if you read it, I mean, you must sense that, like, you could kind of almost sense my, I mean, on one sense, it's a very playful article. I don't think anyone should take it seriously. It's not meant to.
But it's creepy. It's creepy too.
Well, it gets creepy, but so the Raymond Fowler issue. So I started talking. I'll jump to the Kubrick stuff. So in Kubrick's 2001, you know, it has three distinct chapters. It has the chapter with the Dawn of Man with the apes. It has the chapter with the humans, like of sort of what would be modern present day humans, where they find the monolith on the moon. And then there's sort of an apotheosis, this almost godlike climax to the film where the astronaut. I'm assuming it's the astronaut Dave Bowman who returns to Earth in the form of the Star Child, this fetus. And the fetus looks eerily like a gray alien. It's got big eyes, mm-hmm. big bald head. It's got this tiny little body. Raymond Fowler, and he took his research from someone else, and he was just sort of, working with that. But if you take a chimpanzee and there's a study, and people actually study embryos and fetuses, I think it's some form of embryology studies, where the fetus of a chimpanzee at a certain point in its gestation looks eerily like a human. I actually wanted to put some pictures up. They were so freaking gross. I decided not to, and then the human fetus looks eerily like a gray alien.
Yeah, is that picture you posted real too? The human fetus is looking a lot like the cover of Communion, giving us the finger.
That was totally like that. It was actually an article. I googled human fetus alien, and boom, that image came up, and it's connected. There's a link to an article where it's some. It might be like some tabloid from England where they were, you know, they kind of wrote an exploitative article on how creepy it was. But so that's a real image. Yeah, totally a real image, yes. And it sure looked like a gray alien there. It might have something to do with the sonogram, like an effect of the sonogram or something like that. So the thought is. And this is I'm getting totally immersing myself here in the lore of the UFO research. And when I say lore, like, I don't know whether this is true or not, but it's certainly like, you know, what people talk about at UFO conferences and what people write books about, is that somehow some genetic tampering took place in the rich history of our, life on Earth. And the tampering would have taken place with proto-humans, you know, apes. Our closest genetic neighbor is the chimpanzee. And somehow that took place with tampering with the fetus itself. So from that, we get the modern human. The modern human looks like the chimpanzee's fetus. Now, there's something going on right now where women who have had the abduction experience are reporting pregnancy issues, meeting children, false pregnancies that disappear, actually clearly remembering or remembering through hypnotic regression. I've talked to women who remember both, like fetuses being removed. Mm-hmm. This is as creepy and as dark as it gets. But so there we have the fetus looking like the gray alien is this somehow the next lineage in this evolutionary triad? I don't have any proof for it. It's just an avenue of speculation. But I didn't speculate in the form of a dry scientist. I was using references from like tacky TV shows from the 1960s. Well, not tacky. The Outer Limits is a pretty strong television show. But The Outer Limits has a television show which actually has the same triad. It has the chimpanzee, the modern human, and then the sort of godlike exalted human with the that looks like a gray alien with a big bald head. So this shows up in I had to cheat a little bit to make it show up in Planet of the Apes, where there is a creepy doll that they find at the culmination of the Planet of the Apes, and they all point to it as like, that's the proof, that's mm-hmm. the proof. So in essence, there's this creepy little doll with a great big head that they're pointing to, and that comes at the end of the movie, similar to the end of 2001. I don't know if I said this, but 2001 and Planet of the Apes were released 3 days apart.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that to me was really strange. Now, what gets really weird, and I didn't, and I mean this just welled up out of I don't know where, is the Gabrielle Giffords shooting, which took place in Tucson, Arizona. The first doctor to arrive on the scene was named Dr. David Bowman. And that's the name of the character played by Keir DeLay in 2001. He's the fellow who goes through the wormhole. And I think I even like said out loud, I said something like, wow, well, if I find someone named after someone in Planet of the Apes, I'm going to eat my hat, you know? And it didn't take, so I just like did a little Google check and just looked up some of the other names on that were involved in that shooting. And the first person that he worked with, and this young woman died, was a woman named Christina Taylor Green. And Taylor is the name of Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes.
Hmm.
And this gets even, so this woman, she was 9 years old at the time. She was born on September 11th, 2001. So there's these things that this isn't pointing to a vast conspiracy, in my opinion. What it is pointing to is that somehow within the fabric of our reality, highly powerful events will create their own synchronistic cloud, like some sort of echo chamber emerges, and these reflective synchronistic, the synchro weirdness, I guess that's the term that's one step beyond just synchro mystic. Something is at play here that isn't, you know, it's not in our hands. Let me just put it that way. And that, so that long, that long article, emerged in a cloud like that. And then afterwards I was having synchronicities connected to that article, as far as number sequences and things that were showing up. I know all that sounds kind of paranoid and strange, but, I've been making a very real effort to document those as best I can.
Well, I feel like humans are definitely out of place. Something is wrong. It's like, I was thinking about my cat the other day. My cat can sniff, you know, okay, can't eat that. It'll kill me. It's poisonous. Humans, we can't do that. We have to learn through watching someone else die first before we know, okay, stay away from that, you know?
Well, we do have some sort of internal things, you know, like we're fear height.
Not as good as animals, though.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so, but yeah, so, I mean, we're disconnected from our animal nature on some level. We believe we're machines. I mean, not all of us, but I mean, that's like that seems to be the way we're indoctrinated through, you know, modern life, to just see ourselves as machines.
It's true. It's true.
Which I don't, you know, I very strongly believe that there's a lot more going on, and that machine is a very feeble way to try to articulate humanity. But, that's the overriding sentiment, I think.
But if we are a vehicle, if the body is a vehicle, I guess it is a machine in a way.
Sure. I mean, it's a machine at the same way it's a garden, at the same way it's a spirit entity, at the same way it's a vehicle for the soul. Sure. I mean, there's lots of different ways to, it's all of those.
Yeah. So what about mythic symbolism that relates to the UFO phenomena?
Well, I mean, I haven't, the mythic in the UFO lore. Now, the way I try to frame this for myself is that if I got a time machine and went back to, you know, ancient Greece, and then, you know, there was an academic, you know, with his toga sitting with his students, you know, talking about the gods, and he would be able to, you know, give me the pantheon of the hierarchy and what it all, you know, in a very dry fashion, he would be able to tell me all this stuff. And there's something else going on too, where there might be some, you know, the crazy, you know, the town fool that had actually ventured up to the top of Mount Olympus and actually met with the gods. That's the person I would much rather talk to rather than the dry academic. I know that I shouldn't use, have used the term the town fool. That's kind of weighted a little bit in a way that avoided it, but that, you know what I mean, like the guy who's, you know, the zealot with his eyes ablazed and who, you know, actually, you know, interacted with the gods. Those are the people I'm more interested in talking to. This imagery emerges, there are two separate stories that I don't think, I've only talked to one of the people involved. One of them happened to Betty Andreasen, where she was, this is in one of the, there's a series, I think there's four books in the series on her case alone, also written by Raymond Fowler. And this is interesting. Raymond Fowler also wrote a book, his last book. He's in his early 80s now. He's kind of seems to have divorced himself from the UFO subject. But his final book, his last two books, the one before his final book was about his own personal abduction experiences. And that was kind of came, you know, so here's like a 75-year-old man writing about his abduction experiences. And he had been a prominent researcher in the, you know, abduction field for decades at that point. So that was a very interesting book to come out. And then the book that followed that up was called Synchrophile, where he talked about all the synchronicities that were following him in his life. Now, I just, so that parallels a lot of people's journey. Let me put it that way, that, you know, that there's, you know, that like, it seems like in a way it paralleled my journey where when, as I stepped into this, I really didn't want to come to terms with my own experiences. And it was in a way, the synchronicities that forced me to pay attention. Now, Betty Andreasen had an experience. She was taken by little gray aliens onto a craft. I think if I'm remembering this correctly, she was like presented with a box. And either she pushed a button on the box or merely touched the box. And immediately she had an outer body experience. And she went through the tunnel, like literally the near-death experience. She like, you know, like went through the tunnel, went to the light, and she was confronted with a giant falcon, a giant eagle was in front of her. And that eagle loomed in front of her. And then, you know, she tells it in very... sort of poetic and sort of exalted terms, where this eagle then crumbles, lights on fire, and she says she could feel the heat coming off of it, and then it crumbles to ash, and from that ash arises a new golden eagle, like an eagle made of shiny gold. Then after that whole thing happens, she's like sucked back through the tube, and then she's standing there with the gray aliens. Now, I mean, that is as mythic a, you know, the Phoenix bird is as mythic a an imagery that shows up in both Native American culture as well as, I think it's Egyptian culture. And, you know, here's this, I would say, rather simple woman, very devout Christian, you know, giving this ancient mythological experience. Now, there's another fellow. His name is David Huggins, and I've spoken with him at great length on the phone. And he put out a book recently, which was a collection of his paintings. And those paintings are all his UFO abduction experiences. He's been painting them compulsively, and he painted the exact same thing. This mythic Phoenix bird experience. And I definitely quizzed him. I said, hey, did you ever read that book by Ray Fowler? And he had no idea what I was talking about. And I feel like I know him good, well enough that if he had, he would have just said it. He just got nothing to hide. So, but I just thought that, so there is this imagery within the UFO lore that speaks to this grand mythology, as well as much more subtle mythologies, you know, like the fairy lore from Northern Europe and in the British Isles, seems to parallel the modern UFO abduction lore.
There's a Brazilian theologian, Ruben Alves. He says, myths are stories that define the contours of a great absence that lives in us. So the question is, what does the myth of aliens represent? You know, is it an absence of something within us?
Well, I mean, if Joseph Campbell, and I've read a bunch of his stuff. I went through a big, long stretch where I was reading.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah. So he was asked, I think it was actually during the Bill Moyers interviews, Bill Moyers asked him, said like, you know, so, you know, what's going on with mythology today? And Joseph Campbell said, well, it's not serving the public as it should. You know, mythology up until recently was the mythology of tribes, was the mythology of independent cultures. And those mythologies are no longer serving us. And then Bill Moyers asked, like, well, what's the new mythology going to be? And Joseph Campbell said, well, I can't answer that. I don't know what the new mythology will be any more than I know what tomorrow night's dream will be. But I do know that it will be a global mythology, because that is what we need collectively as humanity right now. We need a mythology, a global mythology. And the UFO abduction phenomena may be providing that mythology, in the sense that we have, you know, I don't know where they're from. They could be from any number of places. Nobody knows. And if someone told me where they were from, I wouldn't believe them anyway. But the pop culture framework is that they're from some other planet, actually out of our solar system. And so here we have an interloper coming here. And through that, you know, we can see our own collective humanity as a planetary species, because we seem to be interacting with something from an entirely different planet. And then there's certainly all kinds of warnings that take place within the UFO contact experience. You know, oh, you know, you're polluting the planet. You're, you know, you need to quit, you know, put an end to nuclear, you know, producing nuclear bombs and stuff like that. So there are, you know, very clear warnings, but those are the same warnings that, I mean, any, you know, junior high school student writing a science fiction essay would include.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah,
it's not those warnings are necessarily coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, I think this thing here just has to play out, and it's gonna play out. What's gonna happen is gonna happen. I think
soon enough. Yeah,
I think it was Jacques Vallée who said, "The more light projected on the phenomenon, the more we will be creating shadow zones."
Yes, and that's and that's actually, you know, the more we mythologize the phenomena, you know, by saying like, oh, the Pleiadians are the nice blonde ones that, you know, that look like, you know, Norwegians and have like high cheekbones and look like, and the, you know, the grays are from Zeta Reticuli, and then the, you know, the reptilians are from the Draco constellation. I mean, all this mythology is in place now. I mean, you go to a UFO conference, it's just like, it's a theological, you know, seminar. You know, I don't know whether it's true or not, and I have no problem with folklore. I think I'm content with it, but I treat it as folklore.
Yeah, I think that's a better way to do it. Well, Mike, thank you. It's been a pleasure. If you could please mention your website and any other details.
My the blog is hiddenexperience.blogspot.com, and if you Google my name, it comes right up. And my, you know, so and it's and also along there I have. I've been doing some audio interviews, so I have a pretty good collection of audio interviews, probably about 75 different interviews. Most of those focused on the abduction experience, whether I'm interviewing people who have the firsthand experience or people with that are doing research. So that's been the focal point of the overall blog. And some of my own experiences are listed there, and a lot of links to other stories that I think are important.
Great. So check it out, everybody. Thanks for listening. That's it for now.
Thanks so much.
And a big thank you to our Red Ice subscribers who make what we do possible. Because of your support, we're able to provide an outlet for the voices of the new paradigm, or perhaps voices who remember the glory of a paradigm that once was. Thanks for listening. Much more to come.